This Dr. Pohl podcast is made possible with support from Vetrisyn, your trusted name in animal wellness products. Learn more about our products, which makes caring for your animals simple and easy, at Vetrisyn.com. That's Vetrisyn.com.
Welcome back to the Incredible Dr. Pohlcast. I'm your host, Charles Pohl. I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, the Incredible Dr. Pohl, as well as co-executive producer of the Incredible Dr. Pohl, Jonathan Schroeder. And our engineer today is Michael Stankovich. But I'm very pleased to announce we're going to have a special guest today, the executive producer of the Incredible Dr. Pohl, Ted Duval.
Duval. Ted Duval, showrunner and executive producer, Ted Duval.
I've known Ted for several years, and I still can't say his name right. I get that from my dad.
Right. Just blame it on me. Your Dutch is not good enough to say it that way. No, if it would be in the Dutch, you always would say it Duval, and that doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't sound as nice.
You know what that means?
No. What does it mean?
Devil.
Oh, okay. So definitely not.
No,
Ted it's devil. Not accurate.
No.
In most circumstances, devil would not be accurate.
No.
It's not accurate.
He is a very nice guy that keeps us going and keeps everybody in line a little bit, but most of the time he's just saying, it looks good, guys, let's keep going.
And if you hear birds in the background, we should note that it's a nice warm day here in Michigan, so we're deciding to podcast with the windows open, so we're giving you a little beautiful background music. So let's get right to it. Ted, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So I think one of the questions that our listeners would want to know is what goes into executive producing a television show like The Incredible Dr. Pohl?
And what is a showrunner in general?
So those two questions basically can be answered with one, and that is I get paid to answer questions all day, every day, and sometimes on my day off, and the word off is in air quotes, because generally when you're in field production, you're not off. But to be a little bit more detailed about it, each show has just a myriad of details attached to it, and then if you're producing 10 simultaneously, that just compounds it, multiplies it, and then you have issues that are related to more personnel, which a showrunner has to pay attention to, who's excelling, who needs to be encouraged to do a little bit more. Anticipation is probably a pretty big factor in the job that I do, is trying to look into next week and see what problems need to be addressed, what things need to be set up. But it's a great team that I was fortunate enough to join. It's really the biggest secret about, at least in my opinion, about this job is it beats working for a living. It's kind of silly that I get paid to do this because it's a lot of fun.
Right, a lot of fun. Most of the time, there's two cars following me on the road, and it's always this little black car that comes and brings up the back end and has to catch up and has to stay with us. And sometimes I'm wondering how he does it. But that's Ted. Try and bring up the rear and make sure everybody stays in line.
And Ted, when did you first hear of The Incredible Dr. Pohl, and then how did it come to fruition where you became the showrunner?
So Jeff Luck, the lovely and talented Jeff Luck, was an executive producer at National Geographic Television a few years back, and he was responsible for all of the Wild programming. Nat Geo Wild had produced 4 episodes of The Incredible Dr. Pohl, and they wanted to do more, and they wanted to rearrange how it was being handled in terms of post-production. So Nat Geo Wild, which again, it gets a little complicated with who's who, but basically Nat Geo asked his own production company to take over for post, so Jeff was in charge. I was paid to support Jeff and another executive producer in D.C. Managing a lot of the post for shows. And so my first experience with Dr. Pohl on television was looking at a case where a dairy farmer had called in one of his calves He came out in the morning and found it dead. Wanted to know why. So for the first time in my life, I saw something that we refer to as a necropsy, where Doc brought some tools out of his car and Charles was in the scene. And I saw stuff that I never thought I'd see in my life. And so Jeff, excuse me, Jeff was on for season two, and then he went to do something else, and I filled his, or at least tried to fill his rather sizable shoes in that production company executive producer role, which is different than a showrunner. And so I worked a lot of season three from the field and supported the personnel that were in place at the time. And then, you know, just some passage of time. TV is a very dynamic environment and people move on and do other things all the time. And they asked me to assume both jobs at a certain point in the midst of our season three. And so, right, lucky timing on my part, being in the right place at the right time.
So there are a lot of people that work on the show, both in the field and in post-production, but actually, you were saying television is very dynamic, which it absolutely is, but our show has been very steady in that fashion. What do you attribute that to, that so many people have stayed on season after season after season?
Well, there's a lot at play there. The first thing is an opinion shared by several people who work with us, and that is the complete authenticity of both the talent and the reality that we're seeing. You know, this is a type of show that I tell young people when I'm interviewing them for jobs or being asked to talk to a group is, The Incredible Dr. Pohl puts real back in reality. There is this misnomer with reality. There's this oxymoron called scripted reality. We're none of those, neither of those, I should say. We're completely real. To be totally honest, you know, when you're in television, you're not likely to walk away from a hit show. So there is that, you know, there is just that straight up, this is a hit show, why would I leave? But we've had people leave, and some people have been invited to leave. Some people have been not handed a ticket to come back to the next season, because we've always looked to make sure that we have the best environment for people to work in. But the counter to that is the best people to work in what is a really solid environment to work in. Even though you might have seen a displaced Abba Mason for the fourth time, you can still tell that story in a way that engages the viewer. So it's really, it boils down to, you know, pops, you, your mom, yeah, and having an environment where the characters are completely authentic.
Dr. Pohl, what's your opinion on that? Why do you think the same people keep coming back, and why do you think the show is successful?
So way in the beginning, we had somebody that wanted me to do certain things to the animals for the show. And for me, I said, no, I'm not doing it. Because to me, my patients come first. And it always has been that way. And this is, I think, why the show is a success, because nothing is done to animals to make the show a success. And this is actually Charles's fault. When we did the very, very first teaser, he said to me, he said, Dad, just do your work and we will film it. And yes, that's how the show got started. And that's still the way it is right now.
You know, it's funny because, Ted, you were telling me your other profession that you wanted to do besides journalism, which is what your major was being a veterinarian. I mean, is this a dream job that you get to circle back around and try your hand at least partially imagining yourself as a veterinarian?
Yes, in the short answer. The longer answer is I think I'm the only person on the crew, past, present, and I'll predict future, without wagering any money on it, who's actually reached inside of a cow and pulled out a calf. And I did that when I was 12 and a half, 13 years old. My dad decided for a tax deduction that he would have a black Angus on our gentleman's farm, 11 acres out in what was then much more rural Virginia, Great Falls. And she was the meanest beast that we'd ever been around. And I didn't know, you know, Doc's wisdom back then, but I was amongst the younger set. And my brother and I were sent out there when the cow finally went down to do this. I did want to be Dr. Pohl. I actually, our vet was Dr. Horner. And he would come out and treat our animals both for emergencies and regular stuff. And each time he had a cute vet student with him. So as a 12 and a half year old boy, I thought, well, this is the way to go, is that you'd be a large animal vet, and each week or month or whatever, you'd have a different fun person to ride around with. But the problem is I'm a pretty mediocre in math, and I'm terrible at chemistry, and I failed chemistry, so I couldn't be a vet. So I actually majored in history, which was pretty useful down the line. I wasn't sure at the time what was going to happen with it, but history is good for anybody who wants to get into a communication business.
I think so. The stupid thing is, though, that chemistry is important, and you never use it after you come out of school. Chemistry, it was hard for me, too. I passed it, and I said, okay, and that's the last time I ever opened those books. I don't care what the drug looks like as long as it works. I don't make it. So if the drug works for me, let somebody else figure out what formula it is and put it together. I will inject it when I need to.
So we also have the pleasure of working with a lot of farmers, great farmers in the area. And I wanted to get your sense, Ted, of what you think the importance of the farm is to our show. I mean, obviously, we're in the clinic, we're outside the clinic, but, you know, the farm is a central theme of our show. You know, how do you see the farm as in the context of the Incredible Dr. Pohl?
Well, I think it's fair to say that most Americans are divorced from the notion of farming and where their food comes from. I know that's something that's an important thing for the Poles to make people aware of, is that, you know, this is where it all comes from. As far as a soundstage for a TV show, it's amazing because it's like the television business, it's dynamic. We rely on action. And when we're out when you're out with a herd of 12 cows, it's just amazing controlled chaos. You know, even when it's dairy cattle that are almost to their owners anyway, like dogs, you know, there's still 1,500 to 2,000 pound beasts moving around. There's a lot going on. And you know, for both of you, your guys are completely at home there. So there's not like this worry in other television shows where you're like, all right, well, hey, Doc, get comfortable there. Charles, you look a little out of place. There's nothing like that.
Right. That is with the cows. No, we're not talking about horses now. Right, Charles?
That's right. Horses, I'm always a little edgy.
Yes.
But the thing is about horses, Dad, is that they're completely unpredictable. They'll kick right away, and they'll take you out.
No,
they'll take you out. You can survive a kick from a cow. You cannot survive a kick from a horse.
Oh, it all depends where they kick you. But the main thing is you have to learn to read the animal. And yes, through all the years, you know, I can look at an animal, look it in the eyes, and tell them, okay, this one is safe to handle, or this one we better put on the rope and tie it up before we do anything else. And yes, horses normally you don't have to tie up, but I've been at some horses that were not trained at all, and I had to rope them, and yes, sometimes they almost strangled themselves before they gave up. So yes, I know the animal. You have learned already a lot, and I think this is important, where, you know, the animals that are in the show do not listen to any commands. They do what they want to, and we have to be able to work around them.
And Doc, I like your perspective on bringing the American farm back to the living room. Can you expound on that?
Well, see, that's the thing. We started here 35 years ago, and at the time I was 80% dairy. There were family farms, 3-4 every mile. Not many cows. And that's the people that we served. Through the years, those people have disappeared because farming is 24/7, and you have to be that in order to survive. Right now, the farmers are getting bigger. The farms are getting bigger, I mean. The farmers are fewer. And yes, the bigger the farm, the less we do, for the simple reason that either he does it himself or the cows get better on their own. But I don't like it because, for me, every animal is still an individual, and when it needs help, it needs help. And I would always like to give that. These bigger farms have so many cows, and they'd better have somebody on the farm that knows cows, can look at them from a distance and say, hey, this cow doesn't feel good, we better check it out. That's what I hope is going on. But like I said, the bigger the farm, the less they call us. And for me, it's a pity because we still need food. Right now, the milk price in this United States is so low that, to be honest with you, I don't know how farmers can survive with that little bit of money they're getting in from their milk production. At this moment, I can tell you also that there's a milk overproduction, and they are actually dumping milk back into the lagoons at the farms. This is something that bothers me too, because I'm a Dutchman and I am so stingy that even Charles had to walk around in pants with holes in it. So to me, that is a waste. And especially when you see things going to waste like this, it bothers me. But what can I do? It's just a little guy that cannot do everything.
Well, on that note, we need to take a break. We'll be back with you right after this.
Support from this podcast comes from Vetresen. Vetresen is asking pet parents and animal owners worldwide what they enjoy most about caring for animals. Come share your stories at vetresen.com. That's VETERICYN.com.
Welcome back to the Incredible Dr. Polecast. We're here with our special guest, executive producer of the Incredible Dr. Pole, Ted Duval.
Ted Duval.
I've said it so many times wrong, I have to actually stop and think about it, because otherwise it just spills out of my mouth. So, Ted, let me ask you, what is the complication of having so many cases coming through the clinic, so many different variables of farm calls, small animals? How do you fit all that into an hour-long episode or a 10-episode season, you know, with all the stuff that we're taking?
Let me answer that, and if you don't know the answer, it means that you have a camera in your face all day long, a microphone in your pocket all day long. And then it goes to Washington, and that's where the people then decide what's going on, what's not going on. If I'm wrong, please expand.
I would never deign to say that Dr. Pohl is wrong. What I would say, it's a different perspective. And without giving away too much of the recipe of how we make the secret sauce, we do have to assess each case for its merits. We do have guys and gals in the field who rate these cases, and then they go back to post, where there's a little bit of a positive, I would say, disconnect from the material, because they weren't there, and they assess it. And, you know, we have experts out here, we have experts back there. By and large, since we are likely going into season 7, the process has sorted itself out. There are some cases that are natural slam dunks for television. There are some cases that are solid. There are some cases that help us in the show ease off on the gas pedal for the pacing and the energy, a little breather, a little palate cleanser. And there are some cases that we devote a whole lot of attention to and a whole lot of resource to that, for any number of reasons that are probably too boring to go into, they just don't work for the show, and they don't go into television. But yeah, we have a lot of material. Some people would say that our shoot ratio is shoot to kill. but it's working. And so far, we haven't been sent packing from Pole Veterinary Services. So I say we keep it up until Doc changes his mind.
But there's been an evolution over the seasons, you know. And I think one of the big things, you know, having been here since the beginning and watched the evolution, is that we take more time. It used to be like, bam, right into another case, bam, right into another case, bam, right into another case. And can you kind of talk about how the evolution of saying, like, sitting down and say, hey, wait a second, let's wrap this up and try to make this episode feel like it all belongs together, like it gels?
So I can't speak much to the first season because I wasn't involved. But the second season in post, I've spent a lot of time in post, and I'm older than most everybody in this room, with the exception of one guy who doesn't look old.
Right, Charles?
But what I noticed right away from the stuff that was coming back from the field was, it was very much like, go, 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 and not sitting back and saying, but why are we going? And why are we doing that? And why? And what we needed was a stronger narrative thread, a through line, stuff like that. And the first show that we worked on, what we decided to pursue was a weather thing, because I think there was a tornado or something that actually touched down and everybody went down in the basement. And that worked out really well, but the weather thing was not in the first iteration of the show, wasn't finished. It was just sort of dropped at Act 3, and that was it. So what we've spent a lot of time on, and I know you can attest, and John and Mike as well, is we've spent a lot of time working on that narrative through line. And sometimes there is none. Sometimes there is. Most of the times, it's natural. And it gets back to Doc's point, is this is all real. You know, this isn't like, hey, Doc, cameras are off, let's do take 4. You know, I don't recall a take 4 ever. It's not only that we don't have patience for it or don't have time for it, it's not going to get us anywhere. If there's a flub or whatever in some of this thematic stuff, sure. But as Doc pointed out, in a case where it was so cold, like, and I think one of the, you know, farmers asked him, like, whoa, did you get that take or something like that? And Doc's like, well, we're not putting the calf back in. You know, it's like, we have to be thinking along those ways. With the other stuff, you know, it's a little bit more casual.
So I've asked everyone who's been a guest on our show this question. What, over all the years and everything, what is the thing that you're going to take away? What is the moment you'll take away from this, and you'll be thinking back like 20 years from now and on the show, and it'll be going, what's a case, a moment, like something that is going to stick with you?
I don't know if that narrows down to one. You know, I've been on this show since episode 201, and we're now looking at heading into 701, and we're looking at the 100th episode coming up in, you know, the early part of 2017. So I appreciate the question and the aim of the question, but, you know, it's almost like, well, which of your three kids do you love more? It's like, well, I love them all the same. So
cop out, lie.
Yeah, it's I can hear people groaning. I understand that, but you didn't let me get to my but. The but is, there are moments when you hear in your ear the absolute killer line, or the this is absolutely an act break, or this is Doc just having a blast. And so for the win, I would say that my most favorite show is the one where on a Friday, Doc came in at 0800 and the poop hit the fan right away on the day, and he powered through, you know, emergency after emergency. He's shrugging his shoulders that he doesn't remember this, but because he's been through so many. But for us, it was amazing to watch that narrative happen, start at 0800, build through lunch, keep going in the afternoon. I mean, there were people driving up to the clinic going, please help. There was regular cases that were slotted in. And then, you know, normally it was like 5 or 6 o'clock, you know, clinic closes, doc gets called out on not one but two emergency cases, and he worked from 0800 to 1200 the next, 0100 the next day. And so we realized at the moment that we had something very special, and we did a couple of tweaks. So that's my favorite show. I think that, and this will sound corny, the thing about TV that most people may not realize is you are the majority, the vast majority of your career, you're not on a season two. You're lucky to get season one. What has happened is we've developed friendships on this show with not just crew, but to the talent. You know, there's a lot of, you know, I know you know this, and I wish the audience could see you nodding. There's a lot of shows where that relationship with talent and crew is rough for whatever reason. In this case, it's not. We don't agree on everything. We pursue our interests. Doc takes care of business, you know. But those relationships, you know, I'm proud to say I'll be friends with people on the crew the rest of my day. And I know that if we ever decided to, you know, if the, whatever in the future, 20 years from now, I'll come up and visit you guys and I'll be welcome to come in the door. I know that's not the case with a lot of producers on a lot of shows. Talent might be like, look, psyched to like, goodbye.
Dr. Yes. Pohl, same question to you. Do you have any favorite show moments?
No. I don't know because, you know, there are so many things that are taped that I don't even know what comes in the show and what not. My biggest thing is that what comes in the show is real and then portrays our work. And it, so far, I like it. And yes, friends on the show, yes. Friends in the cast, yes. So where, how and why this happened, I don't know. But through the years now, it has happened where we all work together to make the show. And I think that's the main thing. Nobody is going here and says, well, you know, I want to do it because I want to get over and get up higher. And no, it's a show that is a success and everybody works together. And I think that's what makes the friends. Even the people that go away, sometimes they come back. It is everybody working together.
I have I have one thing that I've been ever since we knew that Ted was coming on the show, I needed to address. Dad, can you talk about, and this kind of goes right into what we were talking about with friendships, can you talk about your rock garden and the day that Ted Duvall built your rock garden? Because that is Duvall. Very rare.
Duvall.
Right. This is the thing, you know, they always not they're not always filming cases. Sometimes they're doing a little things on the side. And yes, this house that we built 7 years ago is still in process of trying to finish it. One of the things was these rocks that we were going down the hill to the Walker basement. And yes, I had asked Charles many times to help me, except Charles, you know, has always something else that is important. So when Ted came over with a bunch of them, it got done in no time flat. And I was wondering, what in the world and how does he know to do all that stuff? Well, I just tried to teach my son how to do it and get and don't get anything done. So yes, this was one of the nice things where everybody was sweating and everybody was working together and it got done.
Well, but Justin Jones was there too. Let's make sure we get that in there. Justin was heaving rocks like I was. But can I... That's part of why it's so fun here, because even though, like I said, I'm the second oldest guy in this conversation, working on this show, I learn a ton. Not just production, like from Jason Neff, like what would be a good camera to use in this versus the one that I recommended. But I'm learning stuff from you two about building a run to a peacock enclosure. Those pumps out in the lake, you know, or what that tool was that looks like a medieval torture weapon, what that actually does. So, and I'm innately curious to the point of annoying a lot of people, but it's really just, it's fun to just sit around and learn stuff. And then last corny moment is we were on a case where the cow's uterus prolapsed. The cow's name was Bowtie. And Bowtie was a friend to these farmers. It wasn't just a straight up, you know, beef cow. This thing had birthed 12 calves a year or something like that. And we went out to that place and we got stuck in their muddy field. And so this was the first time that Doc sort of took a moment and we had a little bit of a connection, because I got that vehicle out from the mud, the tractor actually did, and I knew that I had one shot at this. And so I backed up at about 50 miles an hour, took a 90-degree turn in reverse, slammed it into drive, and hauled ass up the hill to get out of the way and get the car. And I think it just shocked Doc, who was this little guy who drives in a little black car and tries to, you know, keep up the rear, as it were, and keep everybody in line. Drove like a Hollywood stuntman. He's like, wow, Ted, that's, you're a pretty good driver. And right about that time, we happened to be standing right next to each other, and Mike, who not only is a fantastic engineer, but he's a great picture taker, snapped a photo that I have a blow up of at my office, me and Doc. And that was one of those moments that I think you asked me about 10 minutes ago, but I really wasn't prepared. So there you go.
Well, that's amazing. And I just want to say, for your follow-up to the show, you should think about Formula One, because, you know, you got the training and you'll be able to do it.
Well, I don't want to say that I broke any speed limits, but yesterday, because of just some things that were beyond my control, he jumped out way ahead of me. So I was a good 4 minutes behind him and sweating it. Now, I knew the case where we were going wasn't a big deal, but let's just say that I didn't really obey any speed limits, even close to. And I flew over there, and I was amazed when I was surprised when I pulled up to see John and his crew just exiting their vehicle. I was like, all right, well, I caught up. I did it. And then I see in my rearview mirror that Doc hadn't even gotten there. He was just pulling up. And that was a big thing for me, to be able to go up to Doc and say, I beat you.
Yeah, but that was not my fault. I got caught behind one of these tractors that was going down the road at a very slow pace, and there were too many cars coming the other way. So, yes, I couldn't pass them on the right or pass them on the left. You're lucky. Period.
Now, I know we're wrapping up, but the thing about this show, the hallmark of this show is laughter. You hear it a lot of times when just throughout the day. So this crew, both here in Michigan and in DC, we don't take ourselves too seriously, which opens up room for laughter and joy, because this is hard work. But we do take our jobs very seriously. And I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, we've been doing this and nobody's gotten hurt, and it's a volatile environment. You know, farming is a dangerous profession. Cattle and beef farming is terribly dangerous. But we, following Doc and your lead, people are, you know, it's safe and happy, and it's a joyful place, and that comes across in the storytelling.
One last question. We're way over time, but I don't care, because I want to know the answer. Is, do you find, because when I started the show, I mean, I was always had a pretty good sense of humor and, you know, everything, but my humor has definitely got more morbid over the years of working with all the blood and guts and death. I mean, you have to develop a humor about that. Do you find, am I the only one experiencing that, or is your humor also kind of going more dark?
Gallows humor.
My humor's always been kind of sick and twisted, so we can be at home in D.C. watching a case where it's terribly sad or terribly gruesome or whatever, and we'll be eating sandwiches, and it's like, oh, wow, that's... But, you know, the thing about it is, like, when you are exposed to a lot of emotional roller coasters in a day, you never know when somebody's beloved pet is going to come in and have to be put down. So I wouldn't say that my humor's gotten more sick and twisted, but I have grown a greater appreciation for what, you know, what Doc's confronted with day in and day out.
You're right, and I thank you for that. It is always a challenge to get things done and get things done right. And for me, I am so glad that I'm working with animals, because I could not stomach doing the work on people where you know that whatever you do is going to be futile and, you know, the end is near. Animals, like I just was told recently, animals have a price. Even if they are pets, they have a price. So the main thing is that you do the best you can to keep the animal healthy, but at the same time, quality of life for any animal is very important. And I think this is one of the things that comes through in the show, where if the quality of life is gone, let it go.
Well, thank you, everybody. This has been a really special episode of the Incredible Dr. Polecast. I have to thank executive producer of the Incredible Dr. Pol, Ted Duval, for joining us. We have to have you back, and we'll see you again in a couple weeks.
Looking for the best animal wellness products? From eyewash and ear rinse to hot spot spray and wound and skin care, Vetterson has you covered for your home, the farm, and the ranch. Vetterson makes caring for your animals simple and easy. For more information, go to vetterson.com. That's VETERICYN.com.
I was going to share this with the podcast, but you were talking about the humor. I laughed so hard. I laughed into the night. I was crying. I was laughing so hard when we went to Dow Diamond, and they told Dr. Pol that you're going to toss a few balls into the stands. But what you did was throw a bucket of balls as hard as you could into the stands, and you were knocking over beers.
Beating some guy.
Women were screaming.
It was like beat town.
Like, yeah.
This guy, I don't know how that ball ended up in his beer, but that was the funniest thing.
Oh, that was so fun to watch back home.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, that was good. Because that, yeah, we
no
did that.
No lawsuits.
Hey, if I throw a ball, you better watch where it comes. It goes. Alrighty, cover it.
Yep, turn it off or whatever.